It's May 25th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello, welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Al.
I'm Emery.
We're bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery, why are you so tired?
I didn't even know I was pregnant.
And then it just happened. It just out of the blue. Thought you had really bad gas.
Yeah. God, that show is so messed up.
So I've never seen this. I mean, we'll talk about the obvious elephant in the room here of your brand new baby in just a bit. But tell me about this show first.
Well, you know what they say, if it's not about elephants, it's irrelevant. But yeah, there's apparently a TV show, and the only reason I know this is because I like watching The Soup, the Joel McHale show, where they take clips from reality TV shows and just pick it apart. And one of the shows they have on from time to time is called something like I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant. And it's basically these women who I think must have some sort of psychological problem that ends up they go to the bathroom because they have like really bad cramps, or they think something's wrong, or they have, you know, gas, and then they deliver babies, which is having now witnessed a birth and participated in that entire process, I really have a hard time understanding how that's even possible. But yeah,
all right, well,
yeah,
so
I'm now I've now joined ranks with the parents of the world.
So yeah, this is amazing to me. This is I cannot imagine this whole process. You texted me occasionally throughout it, and you sounded like you know I was expecting you to just be completely tired by this point, like not even able to do a show for several weeks. But it sounded like you were kind of managing okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, you shake a baby hard enough, they fall right asleep. Which I shouldn't make a joke about, but no. Did I tell you about the parenting classes that we went to?
Yeah, and well, ended the show. I think two shows ago we ended it with "Don't shake the baby." Yeah.
Yeah, I think a nurse was getting ready to throw us out because they had like this PowerPoint slide deck, and we're going over things like, you know, how do you know something's too small? Like if it fits in a cardboard tube, like a toilet paper tube, then it's too small and a baby can choke on it. You know, things like that. So we're going through all this like household safety stuff, and then they're talking about shaken baby syndrome, and they have this PowerPoint presentation, and they're like, you know, shaken baby syndrome is when you shake a baby. and you can prevent it by not shaking the baby. And they actually had a slide for this and like discussed this. And so my wife and I were laughing. And yeah, people weren't too amused by us finding this hilarious. But I'm tired.
Yeah.
But, you know, it stinks because there's only like, to back up a little bit. And it's not something we've talked about on the show. And it's not something that I really talked about in general. And I think part of that is just because like, there, when some people are expecting a kid, like they are constantly like talking about it, and it's the only thing they talk about.
Right.
And I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. But I think this is the show where we should take some time and go through this process, because there are like you were telling me about, there are a couple even technology related things in here, but also non technology related things that I think other people could definitely learn from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of it's like gifty stuff. Well, I'll back up because people always want to know this. So I have a daughter. Her name is Prudence, and she was born on Mother's Day at around somewhere, I think, I want to say it was like 12:15 or 1:15. That whole day is kind of a blur.
Yeah.
But my wife started laboring on Friday, and then through Friday night, all day Saturday, and then we went to see the midwives at the hospital here, and they gave her the up down. And they said, you know, you can go home for a little while longer if you want, or you can stay here now. So then we actually came back home.
Oh, wow.
And got some rest, or, you know, as much as we could. And then at around 4 a.m. on Sunday is when things started picking up. So, yeah, it was actually a pretty long process. But we did as much of it as we could at home. We hired a doula, which was awesome. And I can't say that all of them are great, but I can say that the ones that we've met have been fantastic, and the one that we hired for our birth was really good and took care of a lot of the stuff that like would have been completely panic-inducing about the entire process.
Sure. Sure.
So it's basically like there's my local hospital has you can either go with, like, you know, the OBs and pediatrics team, or you can go with midwives. So if you want to go that route, it's pretty nice. And it's not like like an episode of Roseanne where you've got like two people crammed into a room and everyone's in stirrups. Like, we had basically like a 4-star luxury suite with like a jacuzzi tub that's about, I want to say, I don't know, like 4 foot high.
Wow.
Big enough for 2 or 3 people.
So this is only in the midwife option. This is not the...
No. It's,
no?
Everyone
can do
this
for everyone?
This.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. But it was definitely, you know, a little bit... I knew that this was going to be the case because that's one of the things we were looking for from the get-go. But yeah, so we had the midwives, we had a doula, and everything was totally copacetic. She was 2 weeks early, so that was unexpected.
Yeah.
But welcome. And she was 7 pounds... 6 ounces?
I don't know relative baby weights, but
me either, but everyone's really interested in knowing that.
Okay.
So yeah. And a few weeks ago, my wife had a baby shower that one of my aunts threw for us, and that was pretty cool because we went to like Amazon and we set up like a gift registry on Amazon. And I should have put in like, you know, referral codes. Support the Hell Yeah Show by buying me baby loot.
Uh-huh.
And someone gave us the advice early on that never ask for clothing because everyone's going to give it to you anyways.
Huh.
And that's absolutely true.
Wow.
The one clothing item that we asked for was a bib that said, "These fools put my cape on backwards." just because it's awesome.
That's amazing.
Then, yeah. And one of the hand-me-downs that we got from one of my wife's colleagues was a Batman onesie. And so when we came home from the hospital, she was wearing her Batman escape outfit, which was pretty great.
Wow.
But yeah, we've got, there's like a million things you can decide and have to sort out quickly.
There's a lot of, you know, to the wish list thing, there's a lot of baby loot out there. But I sort of wonder, you know, how much of it is really necessary stuff? Like, what do you really need? You know, isn't a lot of it kind of junk?
Oh, absolutely. And the other part about it is that so much of it is like, you know, revisited, like safety standards change.
Right.
And so, like, for example, my sister had a baby, and one of my sisters, two of my sisters have had babies. 3 of my sisters have children, and they've probably all encountered this where the standards and the expectations change even from like November.
Wow.
So the people at the hospital that we were talking to in this childhood safety class, they were like, you know, you can't have anything else in the crib, and that includes like mattress pads and things like that. So if you have a crib and then you have like some sort of sheet and then some sort of like pad underneath that, now they're saying you can't do that. Where
what so
you
know, what in it's November, just like the bare fine. Bottom of the crib or something.
Yeah, well, they say that an infant or that a newborn should be sleeping, first of all, always on their back and on a sheet on top of a mattress. That's it.
Oh, okay.
There's like, yeah, there's like a SIDS risk.
Yeah.
And like this whole back to sleep campaign that started in like, I want to say the early to mid 90s, actually cut the risk in half. Like they had, there's like, I think it was like 6% of newborns were dying from,
wow,
from SIDS.
That's massive.
Something huh. like that. I think it was either like 6% or, and then it dropped to 3, or it was 3 and then dropped to 1.
Yeah, that's still, I mean, wow. That's, I had no idea it was that significant of a risk. Wow.
Yeah, huh. I had no idea either. And yeah, most of it appears to be from what I can put together, and I don't know that anyone will ever like tell you this, but it sounds like it's always, almost always respiratory.
Huh.
That either the kiddo gets like trapped under a blanket or
yeah,
face plants on something and can't move because they don't have any like upper body strength. You know, there's like they pull something onto their face or any number of things that can impact this. So air circulation and things like that. And plus, the things you don't know, like until you are like going through this process, are that sometimes babies like just don't breathe for a while.
Right.
Yeah, there's like, you know, like they do like this really weird breathing thing, and sometimes they look like they're having seizures.
It scares the hell out of you, probably. Yeah,
it's very disconcerting, especially yeah, for like, you know, paranoid hypochondriacs like myself.
Right.
Did I say hypochondriac?
Hypochondriac. I don't know.
It is hypochondriac, but yeah. I think I said hyper. But yeah, there's all sorts of weird things that kids do that's very strange. So like right now, the thing that she likes to do seems to be she tries out facial expressions. So she can pretty much like run through a whole catalog of like anything from, you know, angry to delighted in like a few seconds. And she does it a lot while she's sleeping, which is pretty funny. But
so that actually leads into a good discussion here that I wanted to have with, you know, sort of there's all these milestones with the baby, you know, from the sort of surrounding the birth to, you know, the first time she, you know, laughs or, you know, whatever. And you have sort of a pretty streamlined system for making sure that the family is informed about all these things.
Well, yeah, it actually, so one of the things that was really frustrating for all of us, like when one of my sisters had a kid, was that it was really hard to know what was going on. You know, like someone would get like a message saying, yeah, we're going to the hospital, you know, she's in labor and whatever. And then we're kind of like in this black hole for a while. And everyone's kind of like, you know, people get worried. And then like if there's like any circumstances that are unusual or anything like that, like everyone gets like really anxious and everyone is like calling everybody. And like then the worst case scenario is that everyone's hassling the people that are having a baby.
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
So they're expecting, you know, they're sending messages and calling and leaving voicemails. And then people have to like deal with all this stress and everything. So about a month ago, I think I created a Facebook group for really close friends and family with one notable omission. So one of my friends has a similar approach to Facebook that you do, which is that they don't want to participate.
Uh-huh.
And I completely forgot to like tell anything because I had a phone conversation with him like months ago, and you know, we mentioned that we were going to be going down this road or whatever, but didn't, you know, apparently I never told him that we were expecting that she was pregnant. And then when I did finally say like, oh, you know, here's a picture of my daughter, he was like, I didn't even know you were pregnant. So yeah, I felt horrible about that. It was I took it for granted. But the one really great thing about the Facebook group has been that I do my updates there. And so when we went into the hospital, checked in with the midwives, I just sent a note in. And you know, with groups on Facebook, you can just send an email. So you don't even have to like, you know, open up a browser or an app or anything like that. If you can send an email, you can post to these groups.
Yeah.
So everybody had, you know, I stated early on, I was like, this is where I'll be posting the current status of things. I will try to do it frequently and often. So if you, you know, you don't need to hassle us with anything.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So did you still get people breaking that rule, though?
Not so much. I mean, yes, parents to some extent. But it was mainly like that they were just like cheering from the sidelines more. They wanted to make sure that I got a message. It wasn't that they had a question or that they were concerned about something.
Yeah.
And then like my BFF's parents, he told them that that she was born, and then I got a message from them, which was really nice. But it wasn't things like, you know, how are things going, what's going on. It wasn't any of that stuff that I had to like immediately that I felt obligated to respond to.
Well, yeah, because it sounds like this method kind of reduces the possibility of miscommunications or hearsay or that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And then I was talking to one of my sisters about it last weekend, and because here's the other thing is that Saturday morning my grandfather died.
Oh right.
So
I forgot about that. Sorry about
that.
So
we had So everyone's just like really strained and like really tense about things. And his funeral was last week, and I went to that and saw people. And then one of my sisters on her way back to her home was stopped by, and we chatted a little bit about a lot of stuff. But she's getting married in like 2 days, so that's very exciting too. But you know, it's kind of like this the good with the bad, right? Like you get really bad news, but then it's kind of tempered a bit by something like that. So my dad was like really happy, and it was definitely put a different spin on the last few days. But yeah, she was like, you know, I was really skeptical like she was like a Facebook group. You know, she's kind of like kind of tacky.
Oh, is, really? Right? Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
huh.
Well, she was at first, but then she said that that was her reservation. But then in practice, like when it was actually when things were actually going on, and then yeah. like the some of the milestone updates that we've posted and things like that, like she's really liked it a lot. And
yeah.
She said like one of the interesting things about it is that because people would be like hanging out in that private group, right? And so, and it spawned like a bunch of people, like, you know, sending messages and like, it's so exciting. And people having like these little back and forth exchanges. And then, and it was never anything, you know, worrying or troublesome. Like it wasn't people like, you know, I wonder what's going on. You know what I mean? Like it,
yeah.
it really was a different tone. And she said that she really liked that. So I'm glad that, that it worked that way for her at yeah. least. And everyone seemed to be totally fine with
I
it,
mean,
but
I mean, you know, I'm generally skeptical of Facebook, but this is the sort of thing where the fact that pretty much everyone is on Facebook
yeah.
does lend itself to using it for that sort of a thing and using it pretty efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, I would be probably would have been happy with like just a listserv or something, but you know, there's people in my family like my grandparents and my parents, they don't want to sit there and stare at email, but they're
right.
on Facebook a lot because all their, you know what I mean? It's basically, the grandparent audience is well represented there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my immediate family is very well represented there. Cause that's, you know, that's what they're into. That's what they do. So, it was definitely the best option, in terms of like appeal and accessibility for everybody because everyone already knows like how to use it, you know.
Right.
And while
yep.
you know a mailing list or a Tumblr or something might be just as easy, it's like it's one more thing they gotta go do and then
and it, like, well it's like a thing they have to actively
yeah.
seek out, whereas Facebook kind of integrates into the stuff they're already doing and it,
yeah.
they know how to use it already and that sort of stuff. So
yep
yeah
yep. So yeah, that worked out pretty well. We've also used Doodle, so doodle.ch.
I'm a huge fan of Doodle. I think that yeah, actually it's doodle.com now as well, right? Like
oh I don't know,
I believe they have doodle.com.
I'm old school, but
yeah, yeah no, they do. They do. So this is the service where you can easily poll people for either a choice or for a schedule. You know, if you want to schedule an event, you can poll people as to when that event it works best.
It's good for picking a time for meetings or
yeah,
just about
and
anything,
it's super
so.
Super nice, clean interface. Really, I remember you used to organize World of Warcraft raids on Doodle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
And it worked quite well. Good. That was what initially that was the first thing I saw Doodle being used for, and liked it a lot. So what did you use it for during the baby process?
Well, during the process, nothing. But afterwards, a lot of people were like, "Hey, when can we come over and you know meet the baby and all that?" So having kind of funneling it into that, that didn't quite take. People didn't quite get it.
Huh.
And I'm not sure what it was, but like. Yeah, my wife pointed out, she was like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. Because, like, the time compression thing that they do
yeah.
is kind of weird. And
yeah.
so, like, you know, they're like, well, I see that someone signed up, but I don't see anything. And then you have to, like, you know, dig through a little bit. So maybe there's some user enhancement that needs to happen.
And it's so weird because, I mean, of all the services that do that sort of thing, like,
yeah.
Doodle is really clean.
It is.
But
it is.
I guess you have to kind of...
And it's also all in the delivery, too. So if someone has never used it before
yeah.
and doesn't really know what they're looking at, I can
yeah.
see where it would be kind of like, what the hell am I even looking at?
Right. Yeah. yeah.
But so that was the one thing that, that maybe could have been presented better on my part and would have been a little bit better received. But
yeah. Have you used Wintomeet? I think it's Wintomeet.com.
No.
I think it's the number two. Yeah. Oh wait, no, that might not be it. I don't know. But
you're
it's
at a dating site now.
No, it's. I think this actually is it. So you select a date and then select like a time range. Oh, and give it an event name. And then it creates a yeah here. It creates an interface that lets you just drag through a day and select which times you're available. Or through multiple days, or through, you know, whenever the person who is organizing the event has set up, and you don't have to create an account or anything. You can just put your name in, and then it gives you an interface for dragging across a schedule to select the times you're available.
That's pretty cool.
Which is nice, yeah. And then as multiple people continue to do that, then it aggregates everything and it shows you the times that work for everyone. So it tends to be pretty cool and is probably a little bit more approachable than Doodle is.
Huh. I'll check that out.
Yeah. Anyway, so but Facebook, Doodle, any other? You've got your camera here listed as some
yeah, so
some good new baby technology.
I did impress upon my wife the importance of not having the baby until after the UPS guy came on Saturday, because when I realized that there was a sense of urgency that the early labor might be turning into real labor,
yeah,
relatively quickly. I had to speed up my process a little bit, so I opted for the overnight option.
Yeah,
but yeah, I got the Fuji X10. I used a colleague has at my office has the new Fuji X Pro 1, and that camera is amazing. Like that is seriously like a phenomenal camera, but. It is also a fairly pricey option that I don't really feel like I'm deserving of right now. So maybe someday in the future, if I'm still really enjoying taking lots more pictures again, my opinion will change. But I love the X10.
Yeah, I'm looking at some pictures of it. It looks really nice. Nice and compact. And
it is compact. It is. It has a somewhat. It is a lot of manual control. So if you like, and it's like a rangefinder camera. So that's the one thing that I was really wanting to get back to. So I love having a rangefinder.
Yeah, sure.
Which it's definitely a different way to take pictures. It's a different way to look at things. But the it has the optical viewfinder and it has the LCD and it does all the things you would expect. But Fuji also has some neat software. Running on their cameras now. They do this thing called EXR. So they have like they essentially reprogram the sensor for different tasks. So instead of having like the sensor in your camera do everything, they actually like change the programming on it as you're switching modes. So they can kind of optimize things for different types of activity. So it does very good low light candids, which
is
definitely.
That is pretty much the Achilles heel for most cameras.
Yeah. It does. It's a 12 megapixel sensor, but when you have it kicked over into like this really super low light, high ISO EXR mode, it will essentially drop it to like, I want to say 5 or 6 or whatever it can pull off and still deliver good photos.
Oh, that's clever. Huh.
So it does. It prioritizes picture quality over size and resolution,
which is totally the thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So
who cares if the image is 12 megapixels? It's not unless you're using it for a billboard or something. Yeah
Most of the time, I mean, like even a 5 megapixel image, you can do really nice 5x7s, which is like the bigger prints that you would get made if you get them printed. And if you're going for like, you know, an 8x10 or something, then you're already making steps to ensure that you can make that happen with better lighting.
Realistically, I mean, most of the photos are, if not all the photos, are probably going to be seen primarily online or on a computer anyway.
Or some other device. Exactly.
Or some other device, yeah. And those devices, including the computer, don't typically have screen resolutions that can display 12 megapixel images.
That's true. And there's also, like, and even if I do things like in the iPhoto, if I get like, you know, a book made for my parents or something like that, like those aren't going to be like 8x10. They're going to be, you know, one or two 5x7s on each page at the most, you know? So it's definitely not, you know, it's not a limiting factor, to be honest. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it a lot. It's taken me a little bit of effort and experimentation to get a little bit more comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. There's a couple things about the interface that are a little strange, but they are consistently strange across all of the Fuji X line. So I got that going for me. So I figure if I do stick with it and in the future upgrade, then at least I'll still have the same family. Because I think this is where I'll want to be. I don't want to have to carry around a digital SLR. These guys are small. The X10 is not, it does not have an exchangeable lens.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
No, the lens it has is very versatile, however, and very, very fast.
So this is not a Micro Four Thirds setup. Okay.
Huh. It is a completely different technology. So Fuji has this new their Fujinon lens family that they're using for their X series rangefinder cameras. They've launched a new line for it. So I was really skeptical of this at first, and then sat down with it a little bit, and the more I've looked at it, the finer I am with it. I mean, the lens that this camera has is quite good.
Yeah.
I have no complaints about it, and I don't need anything else. And if I ever do, then the X Pro 1, you can exchange lenses on that, or the X100.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm way into this camera. I like it a lot.
Have you been posting photos online anywhere? Is there a place listeners can go to see some of the output from this camera? Is that
I'll have that stuff up yet? I'll figure something out.
Okay.
I've been posting stuff to our Facebook group, but
but you should. You've got a Flickr account, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I stopped using it because I wasn't gonna pay the money anymore.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, I've my Flickr Pro account expires in June, and I don't know. I mean,
I've had some emails before because some of the stuff that I have published online, they're like, I wanted to see this image, but it's not there anymore, and I'm like, oh,
yeah, yeah. Well, I think I let my Flickr Pro account expire at one point, and the traffic to my images dropped off by 75%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I'm making money from selling prints for these photos or anything. You know, it's not super important that I get all this traffic to them, but. You know, still, it's kind of nice to know that anyone can access all of your photos from wherever they are linked off out on the web. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe I'll have to consider that again. But I don't know. The as a service, it just hasn't been as compelling as it once was. And so, have you seen the iCloud? Did you buy iPhoto for iOS?
No.
So there's a version of iPhoto.
I should talk about this. I'll talk about this later. But I bought Aperture for Mac.
You mentioned that, and I want you to tell me about it when we get to your stuff. But
okay.
the iPhoto for iOS is quite good. And one of the really interesting things that it does is it lets you create and share really nicely made web albums, much like iPhoto used to with the MobileMe stuff. But actually, they're a lot better than that. But at least there's an option. But iPhoto for the desktop does not have that capability right now. I can make really nice albums on my phone.
Yeah.
But I can't on my desktop.
That's bizarre.
So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll figure something out. But I'm relatively sure that at some point soon WWDC is next month, right?
Yeah.
So we're expecting new MacBook Pros and maybe an iLife update or something, or some iCloud enhancements.
I'm sure
something's coming.
Possible. I'm sure you will not be receptive to this idea, but I have heard that Google Plus is actually becoming a decent a place for photographers to post their photos.
Okay, so you mentioned this,
yes,
and I did not even tell you this, but I'm starting to relax my anti Google stance.
Oh really? Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm starting to. We can talk about it another time. But I'm not raging as hard as I was a month ago. So that's entirely. I haven't looked into the photo stuff, but I can consider that.
Yeah, I mean it's. I think it's still developing, but I know that Google recently hosted some photography conference, and I think they're trying to do a decent amount of stuff to support photography on Google Plus. So,
well, that would be good because, that would help.
As you were saying earlier, Flickr, used to be, I thought Flickr was the place to be for photographers on the web, and I'm not so sure that is the case anymore.
Well, no one knows where. Yeah, it definitely has a very strong and large community, but it also. The service hasn't changed in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the one hand, that's great.
But the world has changed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've ordered prints from them before, and I had really good results. I know that, I don't know that I've ever really compared them to any other service, but I was really happy with how they came out.
Yeah. They're a great service, right? Almost all aspects of Flickr work well and are well designed and all that stuff. It's just a matter of they're kind of this isolated island on the internet now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, and then there's one other big part of this baby process that is actually I had heard about this phenomenon of one-handed baby gaming. So it is not just you, but I do want to hear your perspective on this.
Also, the biggest downside of her coming 2 weeks early was that Diablo 3 hadn't come out yet.
Right.
So there was, you know, this 2 day wait where I really wanted to get some quality time in. But I actually, and this sounds so terrible because people are going to think I'm like the most horrible parent in the world.
You've got a new baby. Yeah. But it's, I mean,
yeah, I have a new baby and I'm playing Diablo.
There's a lot of sort of almost downtime, right? Where it's like you can't, it's not complete downtime, yeah. But you still got to like hold the baby and yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So we have a couple of these like really great wraps. So I love wearing Prudence. Like when she's sleeping, I love having her attached to me. She's this season's hot accessory. I don't know about that. But what I do know is that I love having her like just nestled really close to me. But I don't like holding her and walking around with her all the time. So we have these two wraps. And then we also have like another carrier gizmo. And so I've had her in all three. And it's great. Because we get her all wrapped up and I wear her for a while. And she gets to, you know, she snuggles in with me and she's like just down there doing her thing and she sleeps for like 3 hours. So when she sleeps and I'm carrying her like that, I can pretty much do just about anything that doesn't involve me like, you know, moving fast.
Right.
So yes. I can't, you know, I can't go running. I can't, you know, not that I was going to run anyways, but I can't like, you know, mow the lawn, obviously, things like that. But I can catch up on TV. I can read and respond to email. And with a mouse like the Razer Naga Epic, I can do everything I need to do in Diablo 3 with one hand.
So what you're saying is really, on that baby registry, you're going to want to include a Razer Naga Epic, right?
It's entirely possible.
Yeah.
So, and that's a game that you can, there's not really a lot of things to do. So it's fun and it's engaging. It's a good way to pass time and it's pretty low attention. So I can be hanging out with my daughter and snuggling her and catching up on stuff and reading news and spending a lot of time like editing photos because I take like, you know, a million pictures and things like that. So it's been pretty good. And I imagine, you know, and I usually don't even need, I can usually have both hands free, but you know, if she's like awake and I just want to be, you know, touching her or giving her a pacifier or hanging out with her and things like that. Like it's definitely useful to have things that you can do one handed. So things like OmniFocus for the iPhone are great because you can be going through your projects and stuff and doing reviews without having to have like a large display.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty great. I've liked that a lot. And since I've been dealing with even Plex, like the Plex remote runs on iOS. So I don't have to like go fishing for remotes and things like that. I can queue up a movie or something while I'm lying on the couch with her or something. So that's pretty good. Cool. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of Diablo. I'm liking it a lot. I've played it through twice now solo. So I'm on the third round. So I'm in hell mode. So that you do normal and then you do inferno and then you have hell and then you have, what's the last one?
The second one's
nightmare. The last one's inferno.
Okay.
So it's normal, and then it's nightmare, which I've played through, and then there's hell, which is pretty difficult, and then inferno is the last one, I think. But
also, we both got copies of Diablo free because we are continually suckered into paying for World of Warcraft for some reason. So I have a copy. I've only played a couple hours of it. I'm still on normal. I'm still in the first act, I believe. I'm interested to hear how it's going for you.
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed playing it. It's definitely not, there's not a whole lot of, I mean, you have to be a little bit more strategic in the higher difficulty settings.
Yeah.
And then they have this, what's it called? There's a mode you can play in, hardcore mode, where if you die, that's it.
For your entire character?
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you have on that character is gone forever. Character's dead.
Wow.
So if you want to play hardcore, you can do that.
Wow! Oh, that sounds terrible, but also kind of great.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you think about you're in that mode. I mean, if you get near death, you must get so freaked out.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that would certainly add a lot of tension. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that, I don't know that anyone. I mean, it's definitely going to be a pretty strong achievement. Like, if someone makes it to like level cap or kills Diablo on hardcore mode,
right? Right.
That's pretty serious, even on normal mode. You know, like there's a lot of opportunity to make mistakes. But I've been playing a Witch Doctor up to like level 52, and that's been fun.
That's a high level. I'm like level 11.
Yeah, there's Well, like I said, I mean, she sleeps a lot. That's pretty much all she does.
Yeah.
she's either hungry or she needs to have her clothes changed or she's sleeping. That's pretty much the three things that she does right now because she's a newborn. So, yeah, and incidentally, like the feeding is the one thing that I can't do. So that's really frustrating because, you know, sure, I'm tired and I'm, you know, exhausted and beat, but you know, my wife's the person that hasn't had like more than 4 hours of sleep in 10 days.
Right. Yeah.
At a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty rough.
That's rough. But, yeah. Yeah.
But the, I've been, I've played through with Witch Doctor a few times, like that a lot, have a lot of fun. It's definitely there's some nuance to it. It's certainly easier in the, earlier difficulty settings, and it gets pretty complex pretty quickly, but it's a neat game. And then I've been playing through with just started a monk, and we'll be playing around with that too. So I think there's a lot of games though, and there's a lot of ways you can entertain yourself while snuggling an infant. It doesn't have to be I was all like, oh, I'm never gonna be able to like and it's stupid because, you know, on the one hand, like if I didn't get to it, wouldn't, you know, I probably wouldn't even care. But I'm glad that I've had the chance to catch up and play around a little bit too. So
cool.
Yeah. Cause I don't have really the energy to like do other things. That's actually what it comes down to, is that, when I do have, some time to do stuff, it's, you know, if it's,
you're not looking for something really like
I'm
intense,
not looking to
paint, mentally and, yeah, and or physically exhausting. Yeah, yeah.
I'm taking some leave, and it's not so I can, you know, put shingles on the roof. Like
right.
It's it's pretty much sleeping and babying.
Yeah,
but I've had a lot of fun with it, and I hope maybe I'll see you playing sometime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as I said, I've been in there a couple hours, but we'll probably end up playing a bit more reasonably soon. So.
Along those lines, though, like finding time. There was a service that someone, I can't even remember like what show I was listening to, but I was listening to a podcast and someone mentioned the service called Sanebox. And what this does is it's a service that analyzes like your email headers. And what it does is figures out the things that you actually are interested in. And then it will help you kind of prioritize those. And the things that are not so interesting, it will put into a different folder for you and then give you like an assessment of the contents of this later.
This sounds like Gmail Priority Inbox, but for your own email, I guess.
Well, you can do it with Gmail too. There's a lot of benefits to that. But yeah. It actually works pretty nicely with Priority Inbox. But it also can, it's a little smarter. And it also lets you really easily designate, like, instead of having to go into, like, Gmail and setting up individual filters. See, this is, like, the thing. Like, you can do this yourself if you know all of the messages that you're going to be getting in the future. And if you know what those subjects, headers, or senders are going to be. You can,
right.
You can do this on your own. You don't need a service to do this. But this is basically an auto filter that learns what's going on with you. And that I really like a lot. So in my experimentation with this so far, I've had really good results with it in terms of what is determined I don't really care about. And it's been 9 out of 10 spot on. But like I said, it also sends you like these little reports where it's like, hey, this is all the things that I shoved into your later folder. If anything here doesn't look right, then let me know and I'll remember that. And it also does things like so you can put it'll create a folder called Sane Later. And that's where things like the low priority email goes. And then there'll be one that's like Sane Tomorrow. So if you want to see an email again tomorrow, you just like label it with saying tomorrow, or you put it in that folder for IMAP, and then it will put it back in your inbox tomorrow.
Huh.
Now, you can also do like next week. So you can say like, oh, next week I want to do this, and then you just put it there, and then in a week it'll show up again, which is great. And then you can also even do things like specific times. So if you say you can forward a message to like, you know, August 5th, 20, or, you know, like 8/5/2012 for, you know, -4 PM.
Wow.
At sanebach.com.
That's so weird.
Yeah. And then it will actually figure out and then remind you at that date and time. And the language and the syntax for the to address that you can create is very robust and very intuitive.
Yeah.
So anytime,
but like the idea of sending yourself an email from the future, or like,
yeah. And there's been people that have done this before. And then there was, did you ever use Sandy?
No, I don't think so.
So Rael Dornfest, who was originally from, well, not about originally, but he's written a few books, and he worked at O'Reilly for a long time. He created a service called Sandy. And Sandy was like an email assistant that you would like do reminders and things like this with, where you could send in things to Sandy and say, like, you know, Sandy, remind me to pick up milk at 4 p.m. or whatever. And then Sandy would send you a text message or an email at 4 o'clock and say, get the milk, and things like that. So Twitter acquired this company. They acquired Sandy for, I don't even know what, but presumably because Twitter is going to eventually do something with tweets where you can do something like this, or they wanted some other part of his code or something. I don't really know. But yeah, there's been people that have kind of experimented with the service before. But I mean, Sanebach, that's not the full service. I mean, it's not just being able to like send you an email in the future. It's also that it can figure out what's important and what's not, and make some decisions accordingly.
Yeah.
Also, it does a good job of, like, you know, receipt mails. It'll filter those for you pretty quickly. I really had good luck with it, though, and it's definitely made my inbox cleaner and without doing anything disruptive or destructive. So I talked to, I had like an email exchange with the founder, and hopefully we'll talk to them at the end of the summer when things settle down for them, because I think they've been experiencing a lot of interest.
Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I've really been happy with it so far, and hopefully continue to enjoy it. It's also not very expensive. I think it's like $5 a month for essentially doing an awful lot of work. Like, if I think about like the amount of, even like just dragging messages and like labeling and filing things, it's easily $5 a month.
Cool. All right. Well, there's a link in the show notes. Definitely worth checking out if you have problems with email overload.
So, how about you? Have you had a baby or anything?
No, actually, surprisingly, in the past few weeks. Yeah, no babies.
I just totally monopolized, like.
No, that's fine. I was planning to spend most of the show talking about your baby related experiences, because I think it is pretty fascinating, especially the Facebook stuff and
I'm sure there'll be more to come.
Yeah, certainly. But I've got a couple quick things to run through. First of all, I'm just going to recommend, let's say you are fascinated by the idea of being put in a zombie apocalypse scenario.
Like Resident Evil?
Yeah, but like a realistic zombie apocalypse scenario.
Oh, like Left 4 Dead.
No, like a yeah, like a realistic zombie. So there's this mod for,
like,
there's a game called Arma, Arma 2. Which is basically like a warfare simulator. So it's supposed to be very realistic, towards the mechanisms of warfare. So
like more strategic or action?
Yeah, no, a lot more strategic, a lot more focus on positioning and communication between squad members and, you know, that sort of stuff, and less focus on shooting things. And so there's this game called Arma, and this I believe one of the developers from Arma actually went off and made this mod called DayZ, which uses the engine from Arma and does a zombie apocalypse scenario, which is so clever. It's so great. It really makes you feel like you are using your wits to survive in this scenario. I mean, there aren't that many zombies. And they tend to cluster around buildings and things, and they don't move that fast. So they're actually reasonably manageable. It's not like you're being overrun by them constantly, like in Left 4 Dead. But there's a lot of other humans. There's about 50 other humans per server. The servers are massive. The maps are like 250 kilometers square. So you'll run into situations where, and resources are pretty tight, ammunition's pretty tight. You get a lot of instances where people will kill other people for their resources to stay alive. So you'll get things like, there's some videos online that are super cool. There's one where this guy gets held up. He's walking down this road and he sees a flare and he walks up to the flare and two bandits come out from the side of the road and start yelling at him to put his gun down. Because all the voice chat is local, so you can only talk to people if they're actually near you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and there's a day-night cycle that follows the actual day and night of the server, like wherever the server is located. So like if you log on at night, it's dark. Like it's pitch black unless there's a moon out. So it's super, super intense in a lot of ways, like very demanding. But it's a lot of fun. So I recommend it. It's not for everyone, certainly, but I've been having a lot of fun with it. So if a hyper realistic simulation of a zombie apocalypse sounds like something you'd be into, I check out daisymod.com. So,
wow, that sounds like I'll have to check that out.
It's been really popular recently. Actually, it pushed Arma 2 to be the number one selling game on Steam last weekend, I think. So
I didn't like that.
Yeah. And then the other random thing is sort of going along with this simulation thing. Microsoft Flight Simulator 10 is...
Oh, wow, 10.
Yeah, 10, right. So there's this new thing, Microsoft Flight, which is not really a simulator. You know, it's not realistic simulation. So you go back to Microsoft Flight Simulator 10, or X, which is sort of the last true flight simulator that they made. And it's... Man, it's intense. I may have invested in some head tracking software and a sensor, as well as something called Real Environment Extreme, which creates realistic weather patterns and whatnot. I'm not sure to what end yet. I may have further updates on why this stuff fascinates me so much, because I really don't entirely know. But I'm fascinated by the idea of these very realistic video game like simulations. So between zombie apocalypse and flying an airplane to Chicago, something in there has me interested. So,
huh?
Yeah. Hey, did you ever use Microsoft Flight Simulator?
Once in the 80s, but I did not enjoy it. I want to say I probably played like the original Flight Simulator for MS-DOS, like way back when.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I've played one since. But even at the time, it was certainly amazing.
Yeah, no, it's come a long way. Of course, Microsoft Flight Simulator X was still like, I think it came out like 2006 or something. So it's still quite old. But since then, a lot of people have done work to add on to it and make it a bit more usable. But yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'm sure it's come a very long way. But yeah. It's a cool, I mean, people actually like, it's a pretty legit simulation, or at least it used to be considered that. I mean,
no, people will like there are
pilots use it.
There's like hundreds of people still, you know, online on the whatever their networked multiplayer thing is, and you know, they'll do realistic simulations. They'll have someone in the air traffic control tower directing air traffic, and then have pilots flying around and listening to a real person who's directing the air traffic. So it's it can get intense. I am not at that level with it yet, but we'll see, I guess. Anyway, all right. Well, we're coming up on the end of the show here, which is just fine because we've only got a few news items to talk about. First is the big one, the fact that Facebook had their IPO on Friday.
Are you serious?
Yeah. What, did you miss all this?
Even I saw that news.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been...
ironically, here's what's funny, too, because there's, like, friends of, like, one of my family members who are like, I don't know, you know, they're all, like, acting like Warren Buffett, you know, they're like, well, I don't know if I should...
Everyone's got an opinion on it, yeah.
Yeah. So, this is, like, on Wednesday or something, and people are like, well, I don't know if I should... And I'm like, and I weighed in on this with, like, you know, it's almost like 9 times out of 10 idiotic to buy at the public offering.
Oh yeah,
because the employees, the insider invest, the insiders, the investors, the employees, and the friends and family. Because like when most companies go public like that, they allow the employees to extend an offering of shares to people in their friends and family, so that they can also participate early.
Right.
And if you're not in that group, I don't know under what circumstances this would ever be a good idea to invest. If you are an individual,
right.
So if you're not like an investment bank who's going to drop, you know, $500 million and acquire a percentage like that for adding to a fund or something like that, then you, in my opinion, and I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, my dad's the guy that knows that stuff, but I've never seen that go well for anybody. So when everyone's like, you know, screaming and raging and the massive butthurt about how the stock is going and like, you know, oh, we're gonna sue you guys, blah blah, like. You know, that's like amateur hour day trader nonsense, as far as I'm concerned. Like
yeah.
anyone that's you know that upset and bitching about the price of a stock a day or even a week after its initial offering, like that does not make any sense to me.
Yeah,
and
I mean, also,
if they're mad because the stock is overvalued, then of course it was overvalued. Like how would you? Why would you assume otherwise? That's what happens when they set that opening price. It's already like. If you don't know what you're buying, why buy it?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the reason why there's been so much fuss about this is, well, obviously, because it's one of the bigger IPOs recently, or of all time, really. And it's also had sort of record amounts of trading volume on the first day, to the point where it actually caused some technical difficulties at NASDAQ.
I heard there was some problem.
Yeah. But basically it was flat on the first day, and now it's down about 15%, from $38 to around $32. And yeah, there's all sorts of legal activity of, people not happy about the way things went down, quite literally went down. But yeah, I think you're totally on the mark in that if you're complaining now about it being overvalued, what has changed in... You know what has changed since a week ago when you invested in it?
You know? Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. Bottom line is that they, you know, they had no business buying it anyways. They thought they were buying a lottery ticket that was guaranteed something.
Yeah, yeah.
They really didn't understand what they were even getting into. And I don't really have any sympathy at all for anyone that's like raging about how much they've lost on this. I think it's asinine.
So
like if that wasn't money you could lose, then why would you?
So let's look at the other side of this, which is sort of what does this mean for Facebook as a company, as a platform? I mean, you know, this is not how the Google IPO went. You know, this is like
but
I mean, you can argue that obviously people are a lot more skeptical this time around, but this was an IPO that was expected to be, you know, extremely hyped up and probably something people would really be enthusiastic after, and you know, people certainly thought that it could have gone up from 38 gained from there. But
38 was already optimistic. That was already
right.
More than the company was actually worth. So my thoughts on this are twofold. One, well, okay, let me to back up a little bit. I think that any controversy surrounding Morgan Stanley's handling of this. So the Morgan Stanley was the broker that handled the offering. And apparently the whole process of this public offering was very high touch. So there's essentially like, you know, one guy at Morgan Stanley that handled the vast majority of this. And that's how they wanted to handle it. That's who they wanted to work with. I think any of the problems there on disclosure, I think it's entirely possible that it's intentional.
Right.
So if you think that the banking industry is a corrupt house of cards, then one way to demonstrate that is to force them to demonstrate that it's a corrupt house of cards by exposing the fact that they are letting insiders know about things before the general public. So there are certain disclosures that have to happen. for any publicly traded company. However, apparently there's some question about what was disclosed to the people who were already shareholders before the offering. And not that, and from what I haven't heard anything that indicates that, it's illegal. It's just the way that it is. So if this is something that politically lets somebody shine a light on this process, like, you know, this is further evidence that like there's a different set of rules for people that have billions of dollars versus everybody else, which there is. This is an example that you can point to illustrate this that people will understand.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a good argument to be made for. I heard an interview. What was it? Bernanke was like down in Chile or something, and my free trial of Sirius XM in my Volkswagen. I heard a really interesting interview with him where someone was like, you know, why is it that people are so hesitant? Like, they're talking about like taxes or something on wealthy people, and then they were like, well, why is there this perception that there's not a lot of investment and that, you know, the job creator thing, you know, like these job creators with all this money don't want to invest because they're being penalized. And Bernanke said, essentially, I'm really paraphrasing, but the long and the short of it was, you know, it's different today to invest in a publicly traded company than it was in the 50s. Now companies have taken extraordinary lengths to conceal and hide assets, financials. The level of transparencies for companies that are publicly traded that benefit from the public investing in them do not have the same level of accountability to individual investors. And he illustrated this with especially oil companies. So you know how like you'll hear that like the oil companies are in serious trouble and they're losing all this money, and then you look like at the Exxon stock price and you're like, you know, F those guys. Like, what are they talking about? They've been, you know, 300% you know, increase in revenue and things like that. But what you don't know is that ExxonMobil also owns like, you know, two dozen subsidiary companies that are hiring out private contractors, and like they have all these like hidden costs that individual investors no longer can even see.
Right.
And so Bernanke's thing was like, you know, maybe the reason people aren't investing in these companies in the same way and that the economy is kind of stalling out is more because people have less incentive to invest because they don't even know what they're buying anymore.
Yeah.
Because with the whole mortgage crisis thing, all of that was like just it was a big smoke and mirrors shell game. And like people were using assets that people didn't understand or know anything about, and then were making bets on those, and which happens in any market. You know, like that's essentially when you invest in something, you're hoping that it becomes more valuable later. But the way that mortgage lenders were juggling things back and forth, and how the banks were handling some of that, like the internal emails that came out from the Lehman Brothers acquisition. I like that afternoon when I was reading over some of I seriously wanted to come home and like just blow my brains out. Like I could not believe like how cavalier and how I, you know, it's very frustrating from my perspective to read something like this and to take them seriously when they're like, oh, you know, we're in dire straits, you know.
Well, so all this is actually interesting in
reference to Facebook.
Yeah, in reference to Facebook, because Facebook is something where like you feel like you pretty much understand, you know, it's like it's this one company. They have a limited number of subsidiaries, if any, you know.
Yes. It is the perfect use case of how there is an uneven field and that there are different classes of investors, and there are different priorities for companies and investment and loaning institutions for this type of thing, because these insiders got word that, like, you know, we're setting the price a little bit higher than we think the value is actually supports. Now, the other part of this is that what the hell is Facebook going to do in the next 5 years?
Right.
they have, I mean, they're essentially an application. They're like Dropbox. So they have like one thing that they do really well. They let people like hook into that with their Signal stuff and their application API and their advertising thing. But they're not Google. They're not a utility. They are essentially like a TV show on a network.
Yeah.
So people, you know, they like the show and they watch it all the time. But there isn't really a lot of infrastructure there that people are depending on. So if you are a very if you're something of an entrepreneurial innovator and you have a knack for finding things that people enjoy using and you want to raise money for that, a very good way for you to do that would be to sell off a lot of your stock and have an awful lot of cash on hand to fund something else. So I think that the Facebook IPO, the fact that there are some inconsistencies and some inequality in how things are handled on that end, I'm not sympathetic with people that are getting hosed on this because it's pretty obvious that's the case, but it lets them have a way to demonstrate and to show this in a very understandable way because there's not all these like small shell companies that they're funneling things through. It's one institution and it's something that people know,
yeah.
As you pointed out. And then there's also already been a cash out. So some, you know, a lot of people have already gotten their money out and now they're able to do other things. And I think it's entirely possible that, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg has still a controlling interest in the company. So he's not, I mean, he hasn't had to lose anything. He has gained an incredible amount of capital and that lets him do other things that he wants to do. And if that's going to be investing in other companies or, you know, starting something new, it's anyone's guess. But I think that the way things played out is perfectly acceptable to everybody that benefited. I think all the people at Facebook are delighted right now.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure.
So even if it's, you know, it's a little off, I don't think that it was a mistake or an accident. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that there's like a big conspiracy or anything like that, because I don't think there's anything, you know, confusing or shady about it. It's something that happens all the time. It's just that now it's about something that people give a crap about because they think they understand what it is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I guess that's my take.
All right. Well, I mean, that's probably reasonable. I think it's, you know, I think overall, like it's an indicator of, like you were saying earlier, that Facebook is not like Google in that it is not a utility. It is not something that is so seamlessly integrated into the way society works.
It doesn't even work really great on mobile devices.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It is. I mean, can you believe that? Like, I want to say it was like a year ago or something that they were like, well, we don't know. Like they were really like on the fence or like noncommittal about how they wanted to support mobile devices and things like that. And their software for a mobile, like iOS at least, are not great. They're inconsistent from the web interface, which is horrible. And secondly, like they're out of step sometimes. Like there's a functionality gap. Like you can do some things on the mobile that you can't do on the web, or and vice versa, and whatever. And it's like that service is something that absolutely needs to be 100% feature parity on any device for people to continue to use it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, you know, it's not like everyone's going to rush off to Diaspora Pods and or something else. I mean, it's not
well,
like that's
real quick here. So my idea for those of you out there, if you want a startup idea out there, here's what I propose.
Well, hold on. Is this a good one? Should we keep it to ourselves?
No, I just want someone to do this. I don't care. I don't care who it is. Someone should do this. Clone Facebook, but but only keep only.
But it's yellow.
Yeah. Clone Facebook. But only keep four things: walls, friends, groups, and photos. Dump everything else. Keep it really clean. Never add more than those four features. And make it work on mobile and the web, right? Make it those four features. Make it exactly like Facebook, but dump all the junk, right?
Huh.
And I think that's killer. I don't think that idea would ever get funded, but I think the way to win is not to come up with some crazy, you know, we're gonna do really good filtering or really good, you know, like, you know, Google Plus circles or like Diaspora, we're gonna do distributed stuff. I think it's just re-implement Facebook and make it better.
See, this is what breaks my heart about Wave. So the initial impetus and the design of the Google Wave service and protocol spec was a fantastic idea. And I don't know why they were so noncommittal about it, other than the fact that, like, you know, it was new and people were kind of like really opposed to it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a lot of skepticism to overcome when you say things like, you know, this is something that can realistically replace email.
Yeah.
So people were obviously like, but that was something that really had some promise there. Like being able to share that type of stuff. I think Google Wave is absolutely a fantastic idea. I don't know why they've gone a different way with it, but like, because I mean, you had that capability where you could create like these kind of ad hoc distribution groups, and then people could send things to you, and you could subscribe to them. And like, I've always wanted a way to have a way for people to subscribe to my stuff, but I want to be able to say what that stuff is. Huh. So I would love it, for example, if you know, my dad wanted to see photos of his granddaughter, there was a way that he would just be fed a stream of things that I tagged Prudence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like that type of like fairly service agnostic, you know, like you don't even need like a website or a place to distribute it. Like you could even just use like a regular RSS, you know, on the back end. Like it doesn't have to be something brand new or super exciting or anything. And even like using something like XMPP, like the, which Google Talk uses and is Jabber, like for messaging and presence and things like that, and group discussions. I don't know. There's the technology already exists. It's just a matter of coming up with a cohesive package for it. And yeah. then you have things like Diaspora, which are like these distributed. So are you also, have you ever seen status.net? It's kind of like it's a microblogging service like Twitter, but it's an open source platform, and you can kind of run your own node.
No, huh?
So there's it's actually really cool, and it's kind of like, you know, the bizarro Twitter is essentially what it is. And so there was a service a few years ago called Haiku that I liked a lot, and I definitely preferred it to Twitter because it had a better mobile interface. Like it was just better for mobile. And then Nokia bought it, and then they killed it, and then I don't even know what happened, but there's all these like little micro blogging messaging subscription presence services out there, but none of them are really getting any traction. But I think it's critical that whatever it is, that it's not so the one thing that I like about something like Diaspora, which is essentially tries to be like a distributed Facebook, is that it's distributed. So I'm not depending on Facebook for anything in particular. I can use any service provider, or any of these like nodes that they let you build. But I think the future is more along those lines than not. Mainly because I want to see some like I like your idea a lot, and I hope that someone figures out a way to do that. I just hope that it's not a monolithic service.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want it to be one website that you go to.
Yeah.
To do all this. Like yeah. I want it to be a open method that other people can build on to do that.
Yeah.
Huh. And I think that would be more beneficial.
Okay. I think that makes sense. Yeah. I think in general, just I think Facebook just feels like this house of cards to me. So and they continue piling new cards on top of it, and it seems to me like people don't generally like the look of those new cards either. So I don't know.
Well, if they didn't like it, they would, you know, you don't have to be there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, they're living on the bottom floor of the house, so what are they?
I'm getting ready. Like, there have been several times where I've like, you know, been yay close to like just bagging it, but then things like, you know, the baby and like this whole like that's where everyone's at. So like I can't really get away.
I know.
Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
Yes, indeed. And with that, I think let's wrap up this show of the Hell Yeah Show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at show@hellyeah.com. And send Emery all of your congratulations.
I think you should.
You can visit us online at show.hellyeah.com.
Or on the Twitter machine, send us a tweet at hellyeahshow, twitter.com/hellyeahshow.
All right. With that, we will see you probably next week.
Hmm.